Okay, from Radio Row in Minneapolis at the Super Bowl, I'm John Osier of Jaguars.com with Tony Boselli, just of Jaguars, right? And then that's what you are this week.
Westwood 1, Jaguars. That's it.
And obviously, you're here to talk about what we talked about last year. We've talked about a lot leading up to this. Pro Football Hall of Fame voting, class of 2018 on Saturday. Your thoughts as this approaches, are they similar to last year? Do you have a different perspective on it?
I probably have a different perspective because I know what to expect, especially Saturday and kind of how long that day is and
right.
in the process up to it. And I think the other difference is last year, you know, I thought it was a long shot for me to make it. You know, there were some positive things going in. But I think it would probably would have been a little bit of a surprise if I did make it, and it was still disappointing. This year, you know, you almost get worried because you're hearing so many positive
sure.
things that, you know, you're going to make it or there's a good chance you're going to make it, and you don't want to build that up too much inside just in case you don't.
Sure. But there's a significance to that. As you know, you're somebody who played in the league, but you also follow the league very closely, so you know how the process works, and there is a momentum thing to it. It's clear that after the vote last year, I said afterward, I thought you'd have a better chance this year because people in the room start talking about it. And people in the room throughout the course of a season, they see each other, they talk about the candidacy. It's clear, from my perspective, that you have some momentum. And I guess you're hearing the same thing. And again, you don't want to get...
Yeah, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself.
Too far about that.
You know,
so.
I mean, because in that room, a lot of things can happen.
Right.
I mean, and you got some... I mean, you got Ray Lewis who's going to make it.
I mean,
my guess is it's not going to be a very long conversation.
Yeah, I heard you saying yesterday he's not worried about about getting cut from this team.
He's not worried about it. I mean, he's sitting back right now somewhere probably, you know, doing whatever he's doing, planning his party for Saturday night. So it's a different, you know, but that's all right. Good for him. He deserved it.
Right.
Had a great career. And then you would think Randy Moss is getting in. And then you have the whole T.O. thing that's out there. Who knows what's going to happen there? And five offensive linemen and a couple safeties and, you know, a couple corner. I mean, so it's all up in the air, and you just don't know where it's going
to
land.
We'll get to some social questions in a second, but something we've talked about over the years, not only for the stuff I've written for Jaguars.com, but just talking, is, A, the respect you have for the process, which we talked about a lot. But what strikes me this year, and I'm sure you did it last year too, even with all the nerves you must be feeling, you enjoy the process and sort of being part of this conversation, don't you? I mean, it's got to be a cool thing that I think some people might miss on.
Yeah, I think.
But you're enjoying it.
Well, it's an honor. I mean, and so why not enjoy it?
Right.
I mean, for to be considered in the even as a finalist is quite an honor. It doesn't mean much at the end of the day. I mean, you don't get any like special prize for being a finalist. But to have your career discussed and people say nice things about you, it always feels good. And when I say I like the process, I'm embracing the process.
Gotcha.
I don't think, you know, it is a different process. It's something I don't think you really understand until you go through it fully. And it's, I guess, you know, so I might as well embrace it. Some guys take it differently. Some guys get upset. Some guys, you know, you can – whatever your personal preference is, mine is, well, I'm here. I might as well enjoy it. And
right, you hear stories about guys saying, hey, if I don't get in this year, don't put me in next year.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, okay.
Well, hey, the voters aren't going to do that. They're going to put you in whether you want to be in or not. So
yeah, you know, there's all kinds of stories of guys that haven't been on the finalists for like 8 straight years. So we'll see.
Gotcha.
We'll see what happens.
We're going to go to social with Bethel_RM. And that's a good question. If you make the Hall of Fame this year, when they are putting on the gold jacket, what will be your first thoughts? I guess you won't know until they're putting on the gold jacket.
Yeah, I don't know, because you don't actually get the gold jacket until
August. Right.
So the way the process works, to give a little insight, the interesting thing is if you make it, you know, everyone goes to the honor show whether you make it or not. You have the non-winners.
Right.
I don't want to say losers, but the non-winners.
Which I've got to think isn't the best party you've ever attended when it's at.
No, it's not that much fun. It really isn't. And then you have the winners or the chosen ones, whatever you want to say. And you all go to the honors. If you don't make it, you fly home the next day, and that's it. If you make it, you spend that whole next day, you know, getting your ring size.
So it happens that fast.
Jacket size.
Gotcha.
I think they schedule when they're going to do the bust or something.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, and you go through the whole process of the day of understanding what's coming up. And then you get the gold jacket, obviously, in August. I think the biggest, you know, wow moment, if it happens, is when I get the knock on the door.
Right, right. So it's up.
Because that's the, like...
And for people unfamiliar,
oh yeah, so
you wait in a hotel room.
I'll be sitting in a hotel room.
And I assume you're watching HBO.
Oh, well, you'll find out. You're here. I told my wife, I'm like, gotta get ready early this year.
Right.
She goes, why? I go, PCAV and Osher are going to be in the room. She's like, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And I think that will be the moment. Like,
sure.
Because it's sudden. I think the putting on the gold jacket, I'll prepared myself. I'll be thinking about it a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big weekend, and so there's a lot of things that are happening. And obviously that's very special as well. But I think the shock to the system will be if you get a knock on the door on Saturday.
That knock on.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it won't be room service.
I hope not.
You won't have that. So
I don't know what I'll be thinking. I mean, because people all the time say, what do you think you're going to be feeling if you make the Hall of Fame? Like, I'm sure I'll be overwhelmed. My daughter told me last night, she says, Dad, are you going to cry? I said, I don't know. I'm not planning on it. She goes, well, if you cry, will you tape it? Because I've never seen you cry before, and I want to see what it looks like when you cry.
Your sons will give you major grief if you cry, though,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't live down that. So, and now, I was going to ask you about that, because I've known Angie since...
Yeah, she'll be crying, by
since
the way.
You were drafted. Are they nervous? I mean, is your family nervous for you, or how do they look at this?
Yeah, my boys are really excited.
Sure.
Because they're coming. My girls are really mad because they're not coming. I think the girls are probably... They're more emotional about it.
Sure.
They're excited for their dad. And I think Angie is, I don't know if nerves or what. I think just want to get to that moment. You know,
get to the right.
Because the anticipation. You know, it's almost like, I guess the best way I can explain it is like when you're a little kid, you're waiting for Christmas. And
sure.
You're like, I just want Christmas to come. I just want it to come. You know, in that situation, you know you're getting good news that next morning.
Right. Unless you've been bad.
Unless you've been bad.
Have you been bad this year?
Yeah,
I guess that's the question.
That's the question. So, I don't know.
I got
it's
going
to be interesting.
Tell us, you know, Jeremy25 writes, tell us about your draft day experience. And I think I know the answer to this. Did you know Tom was going to pick you, or were you surprised? But there was pretty good indication.
Yeah, so Tom actually, I'll ask the second part first and lead up into the Jaguars, brought me out, I think it was in March, for a visit that year. And Tom basically sat me down in his office and said, we're picking you. Unless something changes. Unless
right.
something happens between now and you're our guy. I said, okay. And then, you know, you don't hear anything. I don't hear anything from March and, you know, April's on its way. And I think the beginning of April. Then.
Oh, so from that conversation, you never heard anything after that?
Nope. I think April, beginning of April, end of March, the NFL called and said, hey, we want you to come to New York for the draft. And I said, no, I'm not coming. And or my agent called. They called my agent. I'm like, I don't want to go, Jack. And he's like, well, they really want you. I said, Jack, I'm not going unless you can guarantee that I'm going to be picked in the first 10 pick. Because I'm not going to be – because, you know, every guy's –
sounds silly. That talks to the emotion you go through.
Yeah, I don't want to be
because we in the media
there.
Knew you were going to be in the top five.
I know.
But that's different than us knowing and you knowing.
Yeah, because my fear is – because I'm a draft junkie, so I'd watched the draft all those years. You know, like Thurman Thomas sat in the green room for a whole day.
Right.
Now, you ended up being a Hall of Famer. It worked out for him. But that's a misery.
You don't want to be that guy.
I don't want to. It's not that being that guy. I don't want to experience that publicly.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Sure.
And he said, you're going to be picked in the top 10. I said, all right, I'll go. And so I went and spent the weekend in New York. And, you know, you wake up, you know, I think it was at Madison Square Garden back then or somewhere around there. And you go and you sit there and you go into the back, you know, you do some media stuff and with all the other top 10 guys or top 30 guys, however many guys are there. And you go back in the green room, they give you a table. And the night before the draft, I got a phone call from the Jags. That was the first time I talked to them.
Okay.
And they said, the Bengals just traded up to the first pick. I said, okay. And the rumor is
with Carolina. Carolina was the team at that point.
And the rumor is that they're going to pick you. Have you heard anything? And I said, no.
They're trying to figure out from you.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. I haven't heard anything. And I said, okay, if you hear anything, have your agent call us. I'm like, all right. So I called my agent. I said, Jack, is Cincinnati picking me? He says, not that I've heard. I said, well, let me know if they do. Because back then, going to Cincinnati was like almost a death sentence.
Right, it was right.
They were a real bad franchise.
And they wound up, Kerry Collins was a little bit in play because Carolina wanted
right.
him. But Cincinnati was trading up to get Kajana Carter.
They ended up taking Kajana Carter. And so the pick comes, next fast forward next day, pick comes. They pick Kajana Carter. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to Jacksonville now. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, they.
But he waited a bit, didn't he?
He waited 11 minutes.
That's right. That's right. I
it
remember
was 11
that.
Minutes. Uh-huh. I know for a fact. And so they said Jacksonville's on the clock. I'm like, all right, I'll be getting the, you have a phone there and everything.
Right.
I'm getting a call within the next minute. Minute goes by. I'm like, oh. 3 minutes goes by. I was like, this is something change? I'm looking up at the monitors, looking around.
Oh, so you're seeing Thurman Thomas in your mind.
7, 9 minutes. And I'm like, they're not going to pick me. I'm like, what happened? And then it was 11 minutes, the phone rang, and it was Tom saying we picked you.
Gotcha. Now, do you recall, I have a vivid memory of that night sitting in the team meeting room.
I remember walking in the team meeting room meeting all the media.
Right.
With Angie.
I think you and Angie both walked in, and that was your traveling party.
Yeah.
So
we weren't even married at that time. We were just we were engaged to be married. We got married 2 months later, 3 months later, whatever, June 23rd. I know the date, but I don't know how many months that is between April. 2 months.
You better know the year, too.
1995. I can't forget it. That's easy. It's one of the smart things I've done. I got married the year I got drafted, so how can you forget?
Who? Okay, this is from Mitchie J. 926. Aside from me.
Yeah.
Who was your biggest inspiration throughout your career?
Well, it's tough because I got to think of another one because it was you, John.
Right. Or Prisco.
Yeah, or Prisco. The biggest inspiration. I don't know if there's any one inspiration. I had a lot of great influencers in my life that really helped me. It's one of the things I believe in, that we don't get to where we are by ourselves ever. I mean, I can go, obviously, my dad and mom and my family had, I mean, my dad's work ethic and watching him and my uncle, who's like a grandfather to me, just the way they approached life. And
this wasn't a case, I remember doing a story on you in 95 when you were drafted. Wasn't a case where you were necessarily pushed toward football. I mean,
no,
this was
just,
something
it's just
you,
hard work.
Right.
I mean, I wanted to play football from a young age, but it was just about how you did things. Like, you better work hard. Mm-hmm. You better do things. And then I had great coaches. I mean, Sam Pagano was my coach in high school and was demanding, and you played a certain way, and you respected authority, and you did a certain way. And
you talked to me before about your line coach at SC was a big deal.
I mean, I had two coaches at SC that were so instrumental. John Matsko, who's at the Carolina Panthers now, who I'd never pass blocked in my life. I mean, we were under Sam Pagano, we passed like twice a game.
Right.
And then I came to, and John Matsko taught me how to pass block. I mean, I had never done it before. And he was so influential in my career, and he was a demanding individual as well.
Because you were a big-time recruit, but without that sort of guidance right there, who knows where you go?
Yeah, because I got taught the right way.
Right.
I mean, what if I had a bad line coach? What if I didn't get taught the right way? I mean, the fundamentals and the stuff that really helped me. And then Mike Berry was there my last 2 years. And Mike Berry and John Robinson really pushed me to the next level of challenge. They challenged me to be a great player. And it was really hard. It was a difficult time because they were so demanding. But looking back, it helped me so much. And so you look at that, and I was fortunate enough that I had a guy who I backed up my freshman year. Was a first-rounder, Pat Harlow.
Right.
Who was a nasty,
played a long time.
Nasty
sure.
player and tough. And so, like, everyone says, why do you play with such an edge? And, well, that's how I was taught to play, from Sam Pagano. That's what I saw out of Pat Harlow. That's what John Matsko and Mike Berry demanded.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I guess, in my personality a little bit. So, those, I mean, I had so many influences.
What were
they? And then you look at a guy like Anthony Munoz, who went to SC. I mean, I remember as a sophomore finding a tape of his, a coaching tape, and I just sat there for hours watching it.
Gotcha.
Like, I want to be, that's what I want to be. So, there wasn't any one guy. And then I was, as much as I joke about Tom Coughlin and Mike Mazur, I was lucky to have those guys as coaches.
Right.
They were good coaches. They were good fundamental. Mike Mazur built on what I had done. He didn't come in and try to change everything because he's, you know.
And they certainly didn't say, hey, this guy's a number 2 overall pick. Let's just let him go.
And that's their thing.
That didn't happen?
No. I mean, so I feel very fortunate that I've had great coaches. I mean, that – because I could have very easily had a – because there's bad coaches out there, by the way.
Sure.
And I could have had a bad coach and a bad technician. And I don't think I would have been the player that I was without those guys. So I'm really thankful for those guys.
I'm not sure I've ever asked you this, and I've always been curious. Was it one-on-one in practice with Willie for you guys?
Yeah.
Was that how it went? And how long and
So we were freshmen.
Was that a big deal?
It was a huge deal. Willie McGinnis and I were freshmen together, and Willie was the big recruit.
Right.
We actually had three top 10 picks in our draft.
People who forget,
class.
He was number three overall or four overall, right around you.
Five. Yeah, I think he was five. I was two, and Curtis Conway was eight or nine, all freshmen together. And so I was actually like the third offensive line recruit in our group.
Okay.
There was two offensive linemen ahead of me even. But Willie and Curtis Conway were the guys. And Willie was the defensive end, and he was just Willie McGinnis.
Right.
And so I came in, and I was immediately put on this backup. After one practice, they said, you're the backup tackle. I'm like, oh, great, okay. Which meant I was going against Willie a lot.
I see.
And I kind of took it as a challenge.
He was a year ahead of you, right?
No, Willie and I were the same.
Freshman, okay.
Freshman.
But he came out.
He didn't redshirt, I redshirted.
Right, gotcha.
And so he was the guy. And so I was like, I'm not backing down.
Right.
Like, Willie was like, Willie liked to intimidate people.
Okay.
And he was tough and he was good. And I was like, I'm not backing down. And we would fight and we earned each other's respect where we became great friends.
Right.
But I mean, I'm telling you, we had battles. And to the point where the coaches would like, Willie, Tony, you guys are going against each other.
Just to watch.
And that was like that for 4 years. And he made me a much better player.
And I'm sure he would say the same.
Oh, yeah. And I was telling someone here on Radio Row, or maybe it was Monday night somewhere this week. Like, Willie McGinnis, if I look at all the different players I played against, from Derek Thomas, Bruce Smith, Michael McCrary, Willie McGinnis was as good as any defensive end in the NFL. He was dominant, but he played in the defense where he had to drop. I mean, he played right. Belichick's thing, so he asked to drop a lot. He didn't get a rush to passer like they did all the time. But he was dominant. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, you talk about me in the Hall of Fame, and this is what we're talking about. If I was putting guys that I think should be in the Hall of Fame, William McGinnis would be there, not just because he went to SC, because who he was on the field.
B Style Z 48912. Who wins tic tac toe, you, JP, or Prisca? I don't even know what that means.
Who wins tic tac toe? I do. I mean, I always win. I mean, it's not JP. Win. JP's out.
Period.
I mean,
right.
If it was a round robin, he'd be out in round one, and then the championship would be.
You wouldn't even let him in the game, right?
He hasn't earned it.
Right.
So it'd be Prisco and I would beat Pete. Pete is. Yeah. No, I'd be. I'm going to say.
He's all talk, no game.
Oh, all talk. We know he can talk.
Yeah, he can talk.
But you can. Once you understand Pete Prisco, you can lead him in to trap himself in his own argument.
So I
would lead him into the tic-tac-toe and dominate.
Yeah, I worked with him 7 years.
I get that part.
So, Junie 10 writes, and this is interesting because I'm sure there's a list of guys. Who was the hardest player you ever had to block? And there's guys that maybe people wouldn't think that are on your list.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Willie McGinnis is one of them. Michael McCrary was just a pain in the ass to block.
And that was the case, I remember, the first time
you played. I played twice a year.
Right.
I mean, it was like, golly. So twice a year, I knew I was in for a battle. John Randall, you know, obviously Bruce Smith. The way I approached it, I never looked down at any player I played against. So I always approached the game like, this is going to be a tough matchup. And now there's some guys who are easier than others, don't get me wrong. But you're in the NFL. I mean, I thought every week was a challenge, and I challenged myself to try to be the best I could be. But if you're asking the guys that stood above a little bit, you know, John Randall, Michael McCrary, Willie McGinnis, Bruce Smith, probably.
Final question for social. Curtis, 1738. If you had a chance to redo your career, what would you do differently? And I'm sure there's some things, you know, you'd have liked not to have been injured, but beyond that, I think.
It's a dangerous, for how my career ended, it's a dangerous path for me to go down.
Sure.
And so I don't like doing it. And because there's nights that I can't sleep, I start going down that path and I never go to sleep.
Gotcha.
So it's you know, I'll say this. If I had any advice for a young player that I probably didn't understand, is treat your body like a business entity. Because that's all you have in this game. And that means it's not a 10-month a year. It's not when off-season starts and then when the season's over and let's take 6 weeks off. I'm not saying you shouldn't have time off, but there's ways to do it. I think it's a 365-day, 24/7, all the time of taking care of your body and getting the best people around you that can do it. help you do it. So that's the only thing I don't want to get into, because I do things differently.
Sure.
There's certain decisions I've made that I would do different.
Tony, you're always great, and it's appreciated.
I think we just got kicked off.
Well,
I just saw this.
Well, that's PCAP.
I got PCAP back there. Enough. Shut up, Baselli. We got to go.
I sincerely
wish
you
luck. What else does PCAP have to do? That's what I want to know.
All right, I was going to get sincere and wish you luck, but get out of here.
All right, guys.
Seriously,
I enjoyed it.
Good luck this
Thanks,
week.
Man.
Obviously.
And if you guys are
best.
Too annoying in the hotel room, I'm kicking you out.
That was Tony Baselli with Ozone Live on Facebook.